Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
All right, imagine this. It is nighttime along the New England coast, and spiny 10-legged creatures, 450 million years old, come crawling out of the ocean to mate. And human hunters are there to meet them, to drain them of their valuable blue blood, which the humans need for medicines to help keep their fragile bodies alive. That is not science fiction. That is today. These are horseshoe crabs, and the industry surrounding their valuable blood has taken on new significance amidst the race for the coronavirus vaccine. Ipswich-based science writer Bill Sargent is an expert on horseshoe crabs. He literally wrote the book on them. Sargent is the author of 27 books, including Crab Wars, a tale of horseshoe crabs, ecology, and human health. And he joins us now to tell us their strange story. Bill, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm a great fan of yours, Tiziana. And you were very brave to say Ipswich-based science writer.
Well, thank you so much. And I will never try again to say Ipswich and horseshoe crab next to each other. Okay, so I want to start with this incredible prehistoric creature, because as we were talking this through, Bill, we were realizing this sounds like something out of Jurassic Park, right? But we've got this thing that looks like the world's ugliest crab, and that's saying something. And it's also kind of like a spider, and it's 450 million years old, and it turns out we all need it. So tell us about the horseshoe crab.
Well, I agree with you. I think the horseshoe crabs look like something that Steven Spielberg would have designed for his stormtroopers. But there are two things that are of interest to horseshoe crabs for scientists. And one of their eyes, they have 9 eyes in all. And most of what we know about human vision comes from research on the optic nerve of the horseshoe crabs that run from their 2 compound eyes to their brain. And their brain lies in a circle around their mouths. So these guys actually eat through their brains. I don't know if you do that.
I do about
3 times a day. But the other thing, of course, that's of interest about horseshoe crabs is that blue copper-based blood. And anything that's going to come in contact with the human blood system has to be checked to make sure that it's free of pyrogens. And the way we do that is we use the horseshoe crab blood. And so there's a whole industry that's been built up. Each horseshoe crab is worth about $1,500. So there's not only a very advanced biotech industry, but there's a basic fisheries that is similar to what could have happened in the 1700s, where people simply go out and catch the crabs very carefully, you know, and then they're bled in the laboratory, and theoretically they're returned back to the wild with no mortality. Often what happens under industrial conditions is the trucks won't show up, and the horseshoe crabs will stay out in the sun, and you'll get very high mortality.
So I want to break a bunch of that down. So first, in case listeners aren't completely clear on this, if it gets injected into your blood as a medicine, it's got to be tested for bacteria. And it turns out that basically, Bill, everyone uses horseshoe crab blood to do that test. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yes. So all your listeners, millions and millions of people's lives have been protected by horseshoe crab blood.
Okay.
And right now, they are sort of the unsung heroes of COVID. We've all heard of Anthony Fauci and we've heard of Francis Collins, but it's really horseshoe crabs that have been protecting us from gram-negative bacteria.
And the idea is that this is a sustainable model, Bill, if the crabs are bled, so literally captured and some of their blood taken out and turned into this product that's used for testing and then put back into the wild. That's the next thing, right?
Right.
Okay, and then
but but it always doesn't happen that way. You know, again, under industrial conditions, something will happen. There'll be a screw up. The truck won't show up. The horseshoe crabs are left out in the sun, and you'll get very high mortality, up to 50% mortality. The companies admit to 15% mortality now, which makes me think it's probably on average about 30%.
And New England is rich in horseshoe crabs.
That's right. And we use them primarily for these biomedical purposes. There's also a small bait fishery. So people will use them for catching eels and for conch to make skunjili. And so what happens now is that if you keep the crabs alive and use them for biomedical purposes, each crab is worth $1,500. If you chop them up and use them for bait, they're worth about 30 cents a pound. But unfortunately, what we're doing is we're using them for bait. There's one state, South Carolina, that has made it illegal to use horseshoe crabs for bait. And so you can only use them for biomedical purposes. And I think all the other states should follow their lead. You know, when I first started talking about this, I'd go on radio programs and I'd take callers. And I thought I was going to get a lot of feedback from fishermen who didn't want to be told what they could use for bait. And they said, no, it's not a problem. There are plenty of other species they could use. Spider crabs work just as well as horseshoe crabs. So they really don't have a problem with it. We have a screwy regulation in Massachusetts, and they call it rent-a-crab. And so the fishermen will go out and collect the crabs, sell them to the companies to be bled for the lysate, and then they turn around and the crabs are given back to the fishermen to use for bait. So what you're doing is you're taking what should be, you know, 100% sustainable fisheries into 100% unsustainable fisheries.
All right. So
and nobody's been able to explain the logic of that to me.
Okay. So there's a bunch of stuff in there. First, I just want to, what is spongili, the conch and eel thing?
Skunjili. Skunjili you make from the, you have to have an Italian heritage to understand.
I do, but I still don't know what it is. But it's a food.
They take the meat of a conch and then you slice it up very finely and fry it up and make skunjili. It's wonderful.
Okay. So this is fascinating for a number of reasons. And as I read the book, here's a couple of things that I kept thinking about. All right. So you have this delicate balance of a 450-year-old creature that nobody really knows about, and no offense to the horseshoe crab, or cares about because they don't know about it, that if we don't maintain it, we don't have the next COVID vaccine, basically. You've got two industries coming at that creature, right? You've got a pharmaceutical industry coming at it with, as you're saying, lax practices that run the risk of depleting the supply. Although, as I understand it, that supply is okay right now. And then you've got the fishing industry coming at it. Is there an ecological dimension to this as well? You talk about that in the book. Horseshoe crabs are important for humans, but they're also in a food chain. Talk about that.
Well, they're absolutely in the center of you could actually call it a food web because it's so complex. But they are a keystone species that all kinds of other species depend on for their existence. The most well-known one are the red knots, which are shorebirds that migrate all the way from Tierra del Fuego in the tip of South America all the way up to the Arctic Circle where they nest and lay their eggs. And what they do, they've evolved this over millions and millions of years, that they time their migration so they're on the beach, the beaches of Delaware Bay, during the full moon high tides. So they're there for about 2 weeks and they eat 40 tons of horseshoe crab eggs. and that gives them the fuel they need to make the next leg of their migration up to the Arctic Circle. So if you don't have the horseshoe crabs, and the horseshoe crabs are declining up and down the East Coast, and they're declining in the Delaware Bay area, then you're interfering with this. And they're already seeing that that there's a lot fewer red knots, and there's also when they arrive above the Arctic Circle, they don't have enough fat basically to be able to start laying their eggs.
So there really is a chain reaction here. Now, interestingly, before the horseshoe crabs became central to my ability to get the Pfizer booster that I got in my left shoulder on Monday night, it was bunnies. It used to be that we used groups and groups and groups of rabbits to provide for this testing. Now we use horseshoe crabs. What's next? There's a synthetic version of this that could come along that would preserve this ecology, right?
That's right. There was a scientist in Singapore, and she came up with a way of using essentially it was CRISPR technology, gene splicing technology, to develop an artificial form of lysate that you wouldn't have to use the live horseshoe crabs for.
Lysate being what's in the blood product. Sorry, we just hadn't used that word yet, Bill. So sorry, go ahead.
but what we've found is that it isn't as sensitive, and it's more expensive, and it's harder to use than the natural form of lysate. And I seldom agree with the Food and Drug Administration, but they made the decision not to approve the lysate, not to approve the artificial form of lysate. In the midst of a pandemic, they didn't want to switch horses in midstream, as it were. And I have to agree with them, because we have about 30 years of solid data where we know that the natural form of lysate works particularly well. But we only have a couple years of trials with the artificial form. So I think what's happening is that the companies realize that eventually it will be approved. So what they're doing now is they're kind of cutting some corners. We've seen some evidence on Cape Cod that they're actually collecting the crabs in the shallow waters when they're mating. And essentially what you're doing then is you're taking the female horseshoe crabs out of the breeding population, so you're not getting the next generation of crabs. What we've done for a number of years is we have we set out 100-meter transect, a line along the shore, and you just simply walk along that line and count the number of horseshoe crabs. Formerly, you'd get hundreds and hundreds of horseshoe. You might get between 200 and 300 horseshoe crabs. I was down there about a month ago, and there were only two in a 100-meter transect. Which indicates to me what they're doing is that they're collecting them in the shallow waters, and probably they're collecting them in the shallow waters of the Cape Cod National Seashore, which is actually illegal.
But you don't. I got to be clear, because we are a news program. You don't know this. This is what you think is happening.
Exactly. It's I think it's fairly robust. But this is the way you collect data.
Yep.
And we've been collecting it for many, many years. I can't say absolutely that's the case, but we saw this before in the year 2000 when there was a federal court case. And what was happening is that The Cape Cod National Seashore didn't realize it, but people had been collecting the horseshoe crabs in their waters for the last 20 years. So it was quite embarrassing to the seashore. And what they did is it was a federal court case, and they finally They agreed with the Cape Cod National Seashore that they had jurisdiction over the crabs.
So we could be back there
again. And they could uphold
again.
The ban against the crabs.
Yeah. All right. So I find this fascinating. Thanks for updating us on it, Bill. Bill Sargent is an Ipswich-based science writer, the author of 27 books, including Crab Wars, A Tale of Horseshoe Crabs, Ecology, and Human Health. Thanks for being on Radio Boston.
Well done on the pronunciation.
Thank you.